Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
Good morning, everybody. I don't even know what day it is anymore. It's Tuesday. I know. Wait a minute. I got this. It's Tuesday. Show 7. I'm keeping track this year. I'm really going to do it. Truly. The off-season. At least we still got the playoffs right now, so it's sort of the semi-off season. After free agency, that's the real... It's the dog days of the baseball season, and it's the dog days of the NBA off season too. Playoffs are cooking. Fun ones yesterday. Last two in particular were wild ball games. And all three games went under. Yes, even Knicks-Philly. That was barely, but it did. Home teams all won again. But only Cavs covered. You're looking at it from that standpoint. I admit, these are series that I thought I'd have a better handle on. I think Lakers Nuggets always seemed a little bit weird that the total was still so insanely high. I thought Cleveland Orlando you'd have a little bit more offense. Nope. Still, no one could make a bucket. That series is grotesque basketball. And then the Knicks, that was nuts. Back-to-back threes in the final 30 seconds with a steal in between. And some offensive rebounds to boot. Crazy basketball. Lakers continue to play the same game against Denver every single time. They are in the absolute worst remake of Groundhog Day of all time. It's crazy. 10 in a row, and they've basically all been the exact same ballgame. Lakers get off to a pretty good start. They're in there. They're in it. They're up. This one, they were up 20 at one point. And then they biff it late. Denver, just too much execution. Lakers couldn't stop them basically the entire second half. So we'll have to take that into account as these series now shift venues. We'll get to that tomorrow. Today, it's the other three. But I also today, by the way, hello, everyone. Welcome to Fantasy NBA Today. It's Sports Ethos presentation. I am Dan Bespris. Thank you for hanging out with us in the off season, wherever you might be taking in this podcast. Most of you on traditional pod channels, but a decent chunk of you on Twitter as well. I'm at Dan Bespris over there, should you still be looking. This was a weird year, and frankly, a banner year on the rookies front. So I thought it might be kind of fun for us to recheck our feelings on drafting rookies. Because for many seasons, I've said, and I still think by and large this is probably true, but for many seasons I've said, just don't even bother. Just don't even bother, because odds are you're not going to pick the one out of every eight that's a success story on fantasy draft night. And so, you know, if the odds are that terrible, you might convince yourself that you're somehow the smartest person in the room, and maybe you are that smartest person in the room one out of every eight times. But again, and you know, this comes back to part of something we touched on yesterday's show, I'm almost always going to suggest to you folks whatever the mathematical preferred probability path is. Meaning, independent of any specific player analysis, drafting rookies on fantasy draft night is a bad decision. As we've gone through the last couple of seasons, basically every rookie drafted inside the top 90 was a failure. That was like one out of every eight that hit, basically. And it was like two or three per year. And every once in a while, one every, you know, 3 years, you get one that's a success story. And that kind of powers the coal engine, throws a little bit more coal. I'm thinking of like old cartoons where someone's throwing coal in the train, you know, keep it going. It's enabling is what it is. That one hit, intermittent partial reinforcement. My dad always used to talk about how golf was that for him. intermittent partial reinforcement. You hit one good shot out of every 40, and so you want to keep trying to do it again. That's been, for a long time, the story on rookies coming into the NBA. You may recall that last offseason, I did, I think, two podcasts, at least one, maybe two, on how I felt like we needed to, here on Fantasy NBA Today, and when I say we, I mostly mean me in the royal sense, soften our stance on rookie big men coming into the NBA. Because for one, this is a sort of a two-parter, for one, if a rookie big man is not going to be a punt free throw guy, they have a really good opportunity to have fantasy value, if there's any minutes for them, because rebounds, field goal percent, block shots, these are things that can run up your value really fast, provided you don't have the big nine-category pitfalls, like one really bad percentage, or turnovers, which is the stuff that plagues rookie guards coming into the NBA. So that was reason number one, to give rookie big men a look. Reason number two is that oftentimes, those are the rookies getting drafted farther down the board. The rookies that get drafted early throughout the last decade or so have oftentimes, not all the time, this is not a blanket statement, but often been the guys coming in expected to lead an offense. Like a Trae Young is an example of that type of rookie. I know the flip side is like Anthony Davis a decade ago, Cat a decade ago. There are some big men, there are some rookie big men that have been drafted early. This year was unique because the two most highly touted rookies, one of whom actually was drafted in the previous draft in Chet Holmgren, were Chet and Wemby, both big men, both with massive blocks upside. Neither one that profiled as a monster field goal percent type of guy. Chet was decent there at 53%, so I don't want to take anything away from him, but we knew Wemby wasn't going to be a field goal percent positive. But both decent foul shooters. So neither one was going to be what you'd call your traditional punt type of guy. So, and you guys may recall this, and we'll talk about it when we get there, Chet was actually a member of the Dan Bespris Old Man Squad, which is not a great moniker anymore, because he's obviously not an old man, but he was on that board because I actually felt that Chet going in the 40s, which is where he was getting drafted, severely underestimated his fantasy ability because he profiled as like Miles Turner, who was going earlier than him every time, but nobody had any fear about Miles or whatever. I think everybody thought Chet was going to get beat up and miss a bunch of ball games, but that's what's been happening to Miles Turner for the last 6 years in a row. He hasn't been fully healthy. So yeah, I thought there was a nice chance that Chet could outperform his ADP, and he did. I was very worried about Wembanyama. You guys may recall from fantasy draft season, because he had been pushed and pushed and pushed, and all of a sudden he was going at like pick 18, and I thought, good Lord, it's asking this dude to acclimate to the NBA really fast. And then sure enough, he was a top five player the second half of the season, so yeah, he panned out. Those were basically, and you know, where you found Scoot was kind of dependent on your league. Scoot went, in one of my more competitive leagues, he went in the 90s. So kind of borderline on the would you even consider him a rookie that went early enough. I think we can probably say he was. But those were the three rookies that were consistently getting drafted inside the top 100. At the very least, because we can say Scoop generally went inside the top 100, and the rest of these guys didn't. I think Oscar Thompson was someone that got drafted regularly, but not inside the top 100. Brandon Miller got drafted regularly. Amen Thompson drafted regularly, but these guys generally went outside the top 100, more like in that 115 to 130 range, when it was kind of like the take a long shot. So this year, in a wild twist, two of the three rookies drafted, what you'd call early, so anywhere inside the top 100, two of the three panned out. And not just panned out, exceeded expectations.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So the question, and I know that the thumbnail for today's show is basically like, can we draft rookies now? That's a extremely simplified version of what the actual question we're asking on today's podcast is. The actual question for today's show is, do we need to alter our current stance in any way? It's a much broader topic, I realize that, but that is the question on today's show. So first, we probably need to say what our actual stance is. All right, so where do we leave off? We're looking at this concept of whether or not we need to adjust our strategy. And so the first thing is, you guys need to know what our strategy is right now. Right now, this is a tweak, remember, from last year. The strategy is isolate rookie big men that have the potential to be a positive when you kind of put their two percentages together, meaning not a typically for a big man, it's not a massive punt free throw guy. And those dudes are ones that we often look at in that, what do we call it, kind of the no man's land range later in a draft. So after 100. And looking back a couple of years, not Mark Williams for this season, but when he came out his rookie year, that was someone we thought about as a possible more of a stash guy for Charlotte because there was a center in front of him. But that type of player, Jalen Duren was a similar one for Detroit. Is this a guy that doesn't have the huge pitfalls? Mark Williams is not a bad free throw shooter. Duren's a little bit worse, but neither one of them is what you'd call sort of a traditional punt free throw guy. And you can usually figure that out by looking at their college stats. Is this a dude that shot 52% at the line in college, or did he shoot like 68 to 80, somewhere in that range? And we can translate that to some degree of accuracy. So that's where we are right now. And frankly, that's why, by the way, we got to give a lot of credit to the tweak we made last offseason. That's why Chet Holmgren ended up on the target board. Because looking at him, you know, typically seasons past, they would have just been like, you know what, I don't want to deal with it. I don't even want to look at these players. They're rookies. Too much work, blah, blah, blah. But then you're like, okay, this is a guy who is 50 plus from the field and close to 80 at the free throw line. If he's not hurting you there and he's going to get close to 30 minutes a ball game, what was the final number for Chet? 29 and a half. So yeah, real close to 30. This is a guy that with a handful of points and rebounds, and we know he's going to block a couple of shots, he had a really good shot to basically coast into the top 50. There really aren't other guys in that range that you can compare him to, but Miles Turner from this season is kind of what it looked like Chet Holmgren's floor was going to be, give or take. Because Chet was actually a better rebounder than Miles, and his team had less size around him. Now, Miles Turner went for 17-7 this year. Chet was didn't score as much, but who the hell cares? He was at 8 rebounds a game. He out-rebounded Miles Turner. We didn't need 2.5 blocks in a night. It was great. It got him inside the top 20, but it wasn't part of the handicap. That was the gravy on top of it. But this discussion isn't about Chet Holmgren specifically. This discussion is, because of the tweaks we made to our strategy last offseason, Chet was a guy that was not immediately ruled out because the hype wasn't nearly as high, probably because he was coming off a season missed due to injury, the fear of him being too spindly to make it through a season, but on a team that we knew was going to be competitive, I thought, all right, especially in Roto, take a shot. Wemby's a little bit different. Wemby was one that I thought was getting overhyped, and for about a month and a half, it looked like he was getting overhyped, and then he magically figured out the NBA and dominated in ways we've never seen before the last 3.5 months of the season. So yeah, obviously he was a massive victory, but does what we saw this year, because other players that we need to speak about this year. Azar Thompson got off to a really quick start, but where did he finish? 175. Nope. Amen Thompson got off to a really slow start, finished at 137, but really only because the Rockets lost Alperen Şengün those last month and a half of the season. Brandon Miller. Over the entire year, he was number 116, which puts him kind of in that probably startable in most formats zone, but borderline. And then it was when LaMelo Ball went down and they traded Gordon Hayward and they went into full tank mode that he shifted into a top 80 gear the final 2 months of the season and became a guy that did end up as like good enough. Head-to-head, you'd call it a win. Roto, you'd probably call that one a loss. Kind of a weird twist because he got drafted at like 95. He was lower than that in full season rank, but he was really good in head-to-head when you needed it most. So that one's borderline. And then Scoot was obviously terrible because he fit all the bills of the rookies you don't want to draft. Rookie ball handler, expected to be in a feature role. Then he got hurt on top of all that stuff and really didn't put it together at any point this year. But for a couple of high assist ball games late in the season, yes, the outlines are there for something in the future, but we're not looking towards the future right now. We are looking at what do we do with the next group of rookies that comes out. And so when you roll the data from this year together, which by and large was more positive for rookies because you had Brandon Podziemski put up some nice numbers for stretches, Derek Lively II put up some nice numbers when he was actually healthy. He finished at 121, by the way, and obviously his value tapered off when the Mavs went out and got Daniel Gafford, but he was pretty good. Rookie big man, bad foul shooter, and almost overcame it with the other stuff. Trayce Jackson-Davis late in the year, very similar fantasy game to Derek Lively II, actually. Big field goal, bad free throw. But they weren't there for the entire season. So it's not like you can point to those guys and say, oh, this is an example of why we should change our strategy. Because the only one of those names we just brought up, besides Brandon Miller, who was close to good enough and got good enough when his team started tanking, was Derek Lively II, who was a rookie big man. So I still think that our strategy right now, by and large, is the way to stick with it, which is to start by quickly kicking the tires on rookie ball handlers and usually saying, no, thank you very much. Because look, none of these guys we just talked about were successful rookie ball handlers. The ones you could point to and say, I guess they sort of are kind of, like, they just weren't even in the draft last year. Brandon Miller was a wing. He was someone that can create his own shot, but better when someone was doing it for him. Scoot, rookie ball handler, was awful. Amen Thompson, sort of, but didn't really get playing time until the final month and a half. And who else of these guys would you even call a guy expected to run their team? Keontae George went 16th to the Jazz. He was awful from an efficiency standpoint. Podziemski, hustle guy. He's a guard, but he's not a rookie ball handler, you'd say. So they weren't even really in the draft last year. The top of the draft was largely Wemby, who's rookie ball handler, but a little bit different. And then you pretty much, and Scoot. But a lot of these other guys that were getting drafted were guys expected to do other stuff. So that's the strategy. Look at the rookie ball handlers, figure out if there's anything that is, you know, transcendent, otherworldly about them, which would be Wemby, and it doesn't seem like that's coming up in any draft for the next like 10 to 15 years. Scoot, where you're like, no, this is going to be a classic overdraft. And then you move to the other stuff. Who are the rookie guys with, I don't want to say big men, but big men fantasy profiles? So Azar Thompson is more of a big man fantasy profile. Was there going to be enough there? There was for like a week. Chet, who didn't come out in this draft, but classic rookie build to take a look at. Derek Lively II was someone that was mentioned a decent amount, and he was worth a very late flyer type. And that was kind of it. So that's what I would ask you guys to do going into next year. The draft is coming up in a little under 2 months. We're going to have our names. We're going to find out who the rookie big men are and what teams they ended up on. Are they going to get any playing time? And when we figure that out, we're going to say, okay, do they shoot the free throws? Are they going to get 25 minutes? Let's take a look at this one. But if you hear, and I don't think we need to change off of this, if you hear about a rookie ball handler, like a team leader type, and they're starting to get pushed up the board, that's where you probably want to wag your finger and say, not for me. So I guess the answer to the question of should we change our strategy is basically no. Oh yeah, good point. Walker Kessler, the previous year, big man, though terrible free throw shooter, and there were a decent number of guys in front of him, but then that team went into a tank and he got good. Not this season, but last season. This year, dealing with injury stuff all year. Good point. Another big man. That, I think, is where we should continue to focus our rookie attention, is they don't usually get pushed up the board too far with buzz. I mean, Wemby and Chet are a little bit different, but Chet didn't even get pushed up all that far. But they're usually one or two rookie big men floating around that end up on a team where they get to play and won't ruin your fantasy team. That's the key for these dudes. Can they not ruin some part of your fantasy team? So we're keeping it the same in the face of overwhelming evidence. It's a joke. In the face of 2 out of 3 rookies that got drafted early having success, it was basically Wemby, who's an alien, Chet, who fit the mold of the type of rookie we are willing to draft, and Scoot, who was the anti-rookie we're willing to draft. It actually had everything. And then all those guys that got drafted late, you know, a couple of them were okay, but none of them really hyper-excelled for longer than a couple of weeks, other than Brandon Miller, who excelled for like 2 months. Still not enough, by the way, in my eyes. So no changes, stubborn Bespris though I may be. But I wasn't stubborn last year. Remember, we made the tweak when we needed to make the tweak. Because big men, you know, overall, not just rookie big men overall are being forced to shoot more. So you're seeing rookie bigs come out that have a little touch. An invisible touch? No, Phil. Not an invisible touch. Let's see what's going on in the NBA tonight. It's a few of the other series. They went 3 games yesterday, 3 today, and then we'll have some. There's you pivot into days off, so the series are all staggered, which I'm okay with in the first round. Like I actually don't mind that the first round takes a really long time because there are 2 to 3 games every single night. Drives me nuts in later playoff series when you're down to like the conference finals. So there's only 2 series going, and then there's like a day where no one's playing for some reason. We don't need that kind of travel distance. Anyway, Phoenix is at Minnesota tonight. Wolves favored by 2.5 with a total of 212. You know, I guess we can probably put this on the screen for those that are watching on Twitter right now. Hold everybody. We'll get this figured out. What do we got? There we go. See, Dan's figured out the tech on this to a certain degree. There it is. You can see the numbers there. Previous ball game for these two teams was back on Saturday, so they had a couple of days off. Minnesota swarmed the Suns, actually just completely obliterated them. 120-95 exposed all of the issues that Phoenix has, which is they don't defend very well, and if a team can slow down some of the mid-range, Phoenix can fall apart very quickly because Nurkic is going to get owned by Gobert. Durant is going to be awesome because he's Durant. No one can guard that dude. But Minnesota can throw a lot of bodies at Booker and Beal, and they're going to need Booker to just basically be above that, which he probably will in one of these ball games. I don't think it's going to be a 25-point game again. That felt like a pretty lopsided finish. Minnesota out-rebounding Phoenix 52-28 is sort of a non-repeatable number. So you got to figure that Phoenix is going to be more competitive. But man, 2.5 points is not a lot to get. Competitive does not guarantee you're going to cover with 2.5 points. Total of 212 is intriguing. The previous ball game finished at 1215, so that basically was right on the number. They brought it down a couple of points because as the series go, you usually start to see those numbers come down a little bit. I would expect Phoenix to score a little bit more. I would expect Minnesota to score a little bit less. I think the number, I think this, the total is pretty accurate on this ball game. And the side I wouldn't touch.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Because even if you think Phoenix is going to keep it close, keeping it within 2.5 is crazy. I think, I guess, if you think Phoenix is going to keep it close, throwing a, you know, a quarter unit on the money line is probably the way to go, and just hope they don't lose on a buzzer beater. Milwaukee by 1, total of 223.5. Still no Giannis. Bucks ran away with the opener in kind of a surprise twist in this series. Not a huge surprise if you listen to our Friday podcast, because Bruce said, I think Milwaukee's going to come out and I think they're going to get a little bit of an injured star theory thing going. And they did. Great defense from the Bucks, and to some degree, kind of mediocre offense for Indiana. But the Bucks basically said, we're going to take Haliburton out of this thing, and we're going to dare you guys to beat us without him orchestrating, and they couldn't do it. So hopefully Indy has a counter for that. If they didn't before, that makes me a little bit nervous, because we kind of all knew that's what teams are going to do to the Pacers in the playoffs, is run everybody at Haliburton and take their top gear out. So now we see. Does Indy have a counter? Maybe. But again, you're talking about 1 point. This is basically a pick 'em. 223.5 is the total. That last ball game, total was 230. They've adjusted that one in a big way. Well, because the last one finished at 201. Yes, Indy probably scores more. Milwaukee, I think, runs into more issues on offense because Dame was very, very good. Middleton was also very good. Without Giannis, though, they should be a little bit more guardable. I would expect Indiana to show a little bit more on that side of the ball. So I still think this one goes under again. But the side, I don't want anything to do with it. And then the Clippers and Dallas. This is also a one-point game, basically a pick 'em. Dallas is currently favored by 1 after the Clippers took the opener. Surprise twist. Kyrie was good. Luka was meh, and they got no help. The rest of the Mavs were awful. But maybe more than anything, what the you know, this is a ball game that the Clippers, like, they played pretty well, but they weren't overwhelming. Just a lot of Zubats. Harden being hot was obviously helpful as well. But, yeah, it's sort of a weird one. I mean, for Dallas, they need to get something out of anybody that's not a superstar. And they really didn't. Now, to be fair, the superstars took almost all of the shots in this ballgame and figured Luka might be better in the next one. Still no Kawhi. But again, if you think Dallas is going to win, you go money line because, like, you know, 1 point either way is a little bit silly. 216 on the total. This game ended well below that, 206. But you also have to figure that Dallas is going to be better offensively. They weren't great at the free throw line. They shot terribly. Clippers were pretty good on offense. I'm inclined to say that I think this game probably ticks towards the under as well. But weird ones today. Not too strong feelings when you're talking about the betting side in these games. Other than should be a fun night because all three games have a spread of 3 points or less. All right, guys, that'll about wrap it up for us today. Half an hour show with a weird respite in the middle for those that were watching it live. This is what I've said, man. This is why you got to subscribe on the traditional pod channels because I can edit whatever it is that's happening and you get a nice clean run all the way through. But remember, story of the day, don't make any vast changes to your rookie strategy because it basically played out the way we expected with the caveat that Victor Wembanyama was so freaking good that he outpaced what was already the most hype we've ever seen in our lives. That's pretty amazing. I don't expect to see that happen again for another decade. And everything else went the way you'd think. So a few rookie big men had splashes Lively, Jackson Davis, much later in the year. Chet was very, very good. And the other rookies that were tasked with actually going to do stuff had pretty good struggles or had to wait a bunch of time to actually get their opportunity. And you know me, I'm not sitting on a guy for 4.5 months to get a couple of games out of him, which is basically what you would have had to do with someone like an Amen Thompson. He was on wires by the time he started to play better. I think pretty much anybody outside of deep leagues that drafted him, Amen that is, had moved on because he wasn't getting any playing time for 4 months. And there was no guarantee that he was going to without an injury, which then happened. So obviously we need to be keyed in all season long on anybody, rookie or otherwise, but that's something we're going to do no matter what our strategy is on drafting them. As far as drafting goes, you follow the hype, you make sure it hasn't gone too far, you isolate the big men that aren't going to plow your poor numbers in one of the percentages, specifically free throws, and you work from there. I'm Dan Vespers for Fantasy NBA Today. Have a delightful Tuesday, everyone. Back at you tomorrow with another fun one. What are we going to talk about? I don't even know yet. How's that for I've got a whole list of topics and I don't know what order they're going in. It's the offseason. We do what we want. See you then.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.